Coming to you from a small cabin in northern Michigan, but broadcasting to the entire world, this is the Blue Collar Songwriting Podcast with your host, Justin Stover. Today, we interview Nashville-based singer-songwriter, Zach Vinson. All right, here we are at the Blue Collar Songwriting Podcast. Today, we interview a songwriting colleague of mine who I've known for quite some time and have also been a fan of, Zach Vinson. He's here today calling from, you're right in Nashville, correct?
Yeah, Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville, Tennessee. And I asked this question because, truth be told, I kind of forgot. when did you move to Nashville from Michigan?
Just about 4 years ago now. It'll be 4 years, September 1st.
Mm-hmm. And were your reasons for doing so specifically musically related?
Yeah, that was definitely a big part of it. I'd been touring around the Midwest off and on for a few years out of Grand Rapids. And more and more of our college friends from that area were kind of moving away because, you know, the economy was so horrible and nobody could find a job anywhere. Mm-hmm. It was just becoming kind of a stagnant place to be, so my wife and I were both kind of ready for a new adventure, and moving to Nashville, we came and visited and just kind of fell in love with the city, even apart from the music scene here, but mm-hmm. Yeah, doing music was definitely a big part of that, too.
I think everybody who has not been to Nashville, and I include myself, has this vision of just, like, really cool, attractive people who are really good singers walking around the streets and playing dive bars that pay really well, and then, like, getting, like, this incredible songwriting gig where they just write a couple hits and then let the royalties roll in. So was there a point, what was your experience when you first came face-to-face with Nashville? Did it kind of turn upside down some of your expectations, or did it fulfill them beyond? What was that initial experience when you first got there and experienced the music scene there? In some sense, compared to what you had seen before in Michigan and Sheboygan and Boston and all the other places you've been centralized.
Yeah. Nashville honestly reminds me a lot of Grand Rapids in some ways because it's just like a lot of young, creative people doing things they're really passionate about. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in Nashville, it's a little more music-centric than Grand Rapids, but I feel like it's kind of the same ethos, whatever that Greek word is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah, it was interesting moving here because I had some idea of what I was moving into, but not a ton, you know. So it's funny because it's both like exciting because there are so many more music venues, so many more bands, so many more labels, publishers, so many more opportunities. Mm-hmm. To try to make a career out of being a musician here in Nashville. But there's also, like, so much more competition for each one of those mm-hmm. things that sort of cancels everything out.
Right. The ceiling's very high.
Yeah, I feel like the first year or two was kind of going back and forth between, like, being like, man, this is awesome. I could do anything here, and thinking, like, man, I'm just, like, a speck of dust in the giant pile of musicians in Nashville.
And it was starting over, essentially. You did, aside from maybe a few people you knew, did you have, was there any connection that you had there with other musicians before moving?
No, I knew maybe three or four people who lived here, and none of them that I was, like, super close to. Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like any of them, so I'm just kidding. But
honestly, it took us, man, a good two years or so before we really felt like we had friends here. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty long, dark haul for a while.
Right, especially for newlyweds. Didn't you work? I mean, I don't want to jump around too much, but didn't you? What was the name of that restaurant you worked at? And like the people from the Black Keys came in, and all it was like a kind of a hub for superstars or something.
Yeah, it was a restaurant called the Silly Goose. Mm-hmm. I got a job there a week after I moved to Nashville, and worked there for 3.5 years. So mm-hmm. just quit a couple months ago.
Okay.
Yeah, and everybody kind of has their celebrity stories.
Right.
Celebrity sightings around Nashville. But yeah, there's Black Keys come in sometimes. Kings of Leon, lead singer, and his wife would come in all the time. Okay. My favorite was that I once ate the leftovers off of Taylor Swift's plate.
Oh, wow. How were they?
It was pretty good. She only ate half of her dinner, and I was about to scrape it into the trash, and all of a sudden I was like, this is Taylor Swift's
food. Right. That's something. It's just
I can tell this to my grandkids someday, and they're going to be like, Grandpa, you're crazy.
That or Taylor who?
Yeah.
Right.
That's probably more likely.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those things that I would have done it. I would have. There's a lot of celebrities that I don't necessarily like whose food I probably would have eaten just through the story behind it.
That's one of the cool things about Nashville is that even though there's so many famous people floating around, it's not like a L.A. sort of scene where everybody is like following around taking pictures.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like everyone in Nashville sort of has this understanding of like, all right, we'll notice you sitting across the room, but we'll just leave you alone and let you live your life,
mm-hmm.
which I think is pretty cool.
Right. Because I think there's I don't recoil when I think of Nashville, and I would love to visit. Whereas California, aside from some really lovely places there, I've never really wanted to be there because of that celebrity, reputation that it has, where you just picture like the press surrounding everybody and it's a constant stream of flashes and all this. So Nashville doesn't have that sort of reputation to it.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. And now you said the first couple of years were difficult with the Nashville. When did it start picking up a bit, when you started getting decent shows and playing out and feeling like, if not a incredibly well-paid musician, at least a hard-working one?
Yeah, that could be a long story. Basically, I moved here just sort of thinking, all right, I'm just going to... And I really, to back up a little bit, for several years, I just sort of had the mentality of, I'm just going to put my head down and work as hard as I can and hope something comes of it. I kind of realized after I got here that I didn't really work very well to operate without any kind of goals in mind.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I hate like 5-year plans or mm-hmm. any of that kind of stuff, I got to this point. I was actually reading some Rainer Maria Rilke. He's like an Austrian poet.
Hmm. Oh, right. Yep.
And
Prayers of a Young Poet, I think is his...
I was reading that, and he was talking about just the idea of writing as a career, and his advice to this young poet he was writing to was, if there's anything else that you could possibly do in life without, like, dying, you should do that.
Mm-hmm.
In order to, like, to write at a level that's really meaningful, it has to be the only thing you could possibly conceive of doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of got me second guessing some things. I was wondering if it was what I was supposed to be doing with my life, if it was what I was meant to do, and as I said, I already had kind of no concrete goals in mind, so
mm-hmm.
So reading that and a couple of things that were going on around the same time just kind of led me into a pretty dark place. This was back in towards the end of 2011, I guess. I pretty much stopped playing music. I stopped writing songs. I stopped playing shows. And I feel like slowly, barely worked my way out of that over the course of the last mm-hmm. 2.5 years. It's really just been in the last like couple weeks that I started to have some sort of aha moments of understanding what I'm doing with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
A long answer that didn't totally answer.
No, it makes sense. And I mean, how How often a day at this point do you think you spend on music? Because you're self-employed now, right?
Yeah, I just do some freelance work for a couple different people. And it fluctuates so much. Lately, I've been trying to carve out more and more time for musical pursuits. But let's say I can be anywhere from 0 minutes to, you know, several hours.
Right.
It's such like a wide range of things. I mean, that could just mean like I've been spending a lot of time the last couple of weeks trying to figure out some artwork for a new album that I'm finishing up, or I just recently got a gig playing piano for a country singer, which is kind of weird. But
yeah, if anything, it's kind of interesting. It's like eating Taylor Swift's food. I mean, it'll probably have plenty of people to tell stories to, you know, out of it and such.
Yeah, so I actually just played a show with her earlier tonight. She had like a showcase thing for her label people and stuff. Yeah, so I feel like I'm often doing music-related things, but they're just so widely scattered. Mm-hmm. It varies quite a bit from day to day.
Now, lest people think that you just hit a burnout really early in your career when you talked about some of the struggles you went through, you know, around 2011 up to, you know, around now, there is some context. You've been doing music for a very long time, ever since high school. And if you don't mind me asking for the podcast, what's your age?
What is it, 28.
You've been doing music and playing out and doing shows since, what, you were 18 with Cedar Well?
Literally half my life. I was 14.
Oh, wow.
I started playing in my first band. I played with those guys for, I guess, about 6 years. I grew up in Wisconsin, and I moved out to Boston with the guys I was playing music with after high school. And lived out there for a year, and we kind of went our separate ways, and I started doing my own solo project after that, which I've been doing for, man, I guess, like 9 years now.
Right. So you're not a newbie to this. I mean, you are, but you aren't, you know?
Yeah, I'm not that old, but it feels like I've been doing this a long time.
Right. When did you first start writing songs? And I don't count, like, little ditties that you wrote for the cute girl, you know, he sat next to. Well, you know, yeah, but, you know, when you...
My first couple of, like, complete songs, and probably, like, 8th or 9th grade. But then it was summer of 2005, after that band that I was in broke up, that I started writing a little bit more consistently on my own.
Right. Did you write for Cedar Well? Lyrics?
The band Cedar Well, I played with them off and on for a few years, and that was a couple guys from the band that I was in high school, which was called Amalgam.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote some stuff for Amalgam off and on, but I wasn't the main songwriter there.
For some reason, that name rings a bell. Probably just through our own conversations, you've brought it up. But
yeah, that could be.
Okay. But
certainly weren't didn't have enough notoriety to be a household name.
Okay. I didn't like see them on Pitchfork.com and just kind of forgot them. But I thought Cedar Well was a great band. I mean, you know, Eric, what's his last name?
Neve.
Yeah, Eric Neve, who ran for mayor of Sheboygan. I'm gonna put enough information on the podcast site so that people can look up, you know, Cedar Well and such. But he was a solid. I know you've been writing songs for a while and have kind of polished your craft fairly well. But again, lest I lead people into thinking that Cedar Well is some just hack band. He's a serious songwriter, and I remember their album. I don't remember the exact title, but had the one that song California, you know, California, and I search.
Yeah.
Being a really solid album. Front to back, I remember seeing some very high-energy concerts of theirs. I had heard enough people talk about them to conclude that they had some following of sorts. So it was something of a serious commitment for you, at least back then, right?
Yeah. When I started that first band, I was 14, to when I was playing with Cedar Well, which was when I was, like, 19, roughly. We probably did, I don't know, probably somewhere between 100 and 200 concerts together.
Wow. And was, go ahead. Yeah.
Crazy number, but.
Mm-hmm. It's a fair amount, yeah.
Yeah.
Was the move to Boston because it was a city that afforded more opportunities, or was there a connection to Berkeley? I mean, how did that location come into the decision to move?
Eric Neve, who's kind of the main guy in Cedarwell and is also the front man of Amalgam, the band we were in before that, had gone out to Berkeley for a year and then dropped out and was just playing kind of on streets and subways and stuff for a while. And had a few contacts in that city and just really loved the city of Boston. So the rest of the band, myself included, moved out there to join him in the fall of 2004, I guess, 10 mm-hmm. years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't heard of Boston being... I'm sure there's great music there still, but, you know, you don't hear about it as much, but... man, some of my favorite, the Lemonheads, they're my favorite band of all time. They were in Boston. I mean, it's got a pretty rich music history. It's not just the Celtics, you know, that Boston and Irish people. that.
It's funny, though, because, I mean, I lived out there for about a year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was young. I don't think I really knew what I was doing, but I don't think that we ever quite discovered where, like, the pulse of that music scene mm-hmm. was either.
Okay.
And there's certainly some good bands that few pretty awesome venues, but didn't mm-hmm. seem like a very cohesive scene.
Mm-hmm. And especially now compared to Nashville, where as you kind of covered earlier, there simply is music there. You know, it's not, you don't even really have to look for it from the sound of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, we moved from the Amalgam to the Cedarwell years in Boston, and you studied classical music in college, correct?
Yeah, and growing up too.
Okay.
Started taking piano lessons when I was 8, and that's what I ended up going to college for then.
Mm-hmm. And did you play pretty consistently from age 8 on? Were you in band, or did you play for other projects? What were the beginnings of the Zach Vincent pre Amalgam, pre Cedarwell, and pre your current stuff?
It was just kind of your usual random elementary school kid taking piano lessons because their parents make them sort of a situation. For a while I hated it. My parents just wouldn't let me quit. I ended up actually quitting for a while in high school for I think like 2 years, stopped taking lessons and started back up again. But
mm-hmm.
I think when I was in junior high maybe, I started playing at a church
mm-hmm.
with the church band there and did that pretty consistently throughout high school too.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's probably hard to answer this question without sounding pompous or something like that, but the fact that you have it in a song makes me feel all right asking this question. But you know, the song you say, My Left Hand, it moves naturally. I always wonder, you do seem to have a very natural way of playing it. I know it's taken years of practice and blah, 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 and training, but there does seem to be a natural element, which I think is why it works very well, and why you've... Yeah. You know, you've been able, and I think it works especially well for pop music because you need that heart to really make a song move. Has there always been some sort of natural, have you always felt like you could kind of do it? I mean, what's the story as far as your own ability, you think?
That's a good question.
If something sounds arrogant to you, I can edit it out, but feel free to answer honestly.
I think music is like anything else, and that everybody is born with certain natural level of talent or, you know, some ceiling of potential that they can reach, and then I think it's largely up to them to figure out how to make the most of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know when I would have realized, like, oh, I think I'm better at music than I am at other things.
Mm-hmm.
Because it definitely, I used to think I was really good at sports, but now in hindsight, I realize I was really bad at sports.
And I think everybody's had something like that, you know, musicians even, where they assume that they're better at something than they actually are. And then music, I'm good at that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's when you're a kid, you just don't have that self-awareness to really understand what you're good at or bad at. your parents and everybody are just always, like, encouraging you and telling you you're doing a great job, even if you're doing a crappy job.
Right. And, yeah.
Yeah, I guess probably when I was maybe, like, 12 to 14, somewhere in there, I started to realize that, like, playing the piano in particular came easier to me than it did for most people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I wish I had taken that realization and used it to spur me on to practice more and devote myself more to it. But
right. Yeah. I remember when I met you, I can't remember what happened yesterday, but I remember, like, pretty much everything that happened 5 years and past. I
always noticed that about you.
it's a gift and a curse.
I'll run into you, and you'll be like, what were you telling me about so-and-so, you know, like 3 years ago, what we talked about, blah, blah, blah.
You're like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah.
But I remember saying, like, I had heard you play and it was like, kind of like, wow, that's really good. And I had heard, because you were homeschooled, correct?
I was.
Yeah. And I remember I knew a lot of homeschool kids growing up and the ones that were really musical, their curriculum was basically just playing music. And I think I kind of assumed, I mean, they just did that all day. And I kind of assumed that you had the same experience. And I remember you, like, cut me off and he said, I played so many video games when I was young, it wasn't like I just played piano. And I was, like, kind of surprised by that.
Yeah, I wish those video game skills translated into something else in life.
Right, yeah. I know. I mean, there wasn't even a Guitar Hero until fairly recently, which doesn't really translate into real life, you know.
Yeah.
But in light of all this and kind of, you know, various levels of self-awareness you talked about and stages of your own musical development and musical involvement that you had, from a listening level, as a listener, do you recall, if not the exact artist, when you started getting, like, deeply touched by music itself, and particularly the kind of music that would inspire you? I mean, we've all heard Beethoven and been touched by it, but I mean, you know, I think a lot of us have moments or various times throughout life when a certain type of music really makes all the difference. Do you recall that? If not exactly pieces of that?
Yeah, I remember how old I've been. This is probably like 1999, maybe 1998. The first time I heard a ska band, just being like, just like blowing my mind. I was 12 or whatever, and you're just sort of getting out of that phase of listening to, like, cheesy kid songs.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really know what else you like.
Right.
And I had an older brother, so I'd listen to whatever he was listening to, but I remember hearing, it was the OC Supertones,
mm-hmm.
and realizing, like, wow, this is different. What is this?
Mm-hmm.
And then I spent, like, the next 3 years trying to figure out how to play guitar in a ska band, which never actually was in a ska band, so that didn't really
go so well. The upbeat strums and the reggae.
I remember like bringing my cassette tapes to my guitar teacher and being like, how do I do this?
How do I play ska? Yeah.
Yeah.
And were you listening to, before the ska experience, were you listening to totally different music, or was that just kind of one part of a sort of musical journey?
I feel like that was the first time of, like, discovering what I liked on my own,
mm-hmm.
you know, rather than just listening to whatever, like, my brother or my parents said on the radio. Or
mm-hmm.
It was kind of my own first time of making my own decision of what I wanted to listen to,
right.
As far as I can remember.
It was like a discovery you could claim for yourself.
Yeah.
And do you have a favorite singer or artist? Has there been one that's really done it consistently?
That's a good question. I feel like, this sounds awful, but I feel like I don't listen to very much music anymore. I mean, there's a couple Over the Rhine albums from, like, early to mid-2000s that, like, blow me away. For a long time, I noticed that they were my favorite artists, but the last couple of records they put out just haven't been quite as good, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. And let me guess.
Ohio that came out in maybe 2003.
The double album.
To this day, that's my favorite album in the world. It's like 90 minutes long, and there's not a single song that I ever want to skip to.
Yeah, I agree. And like, I've seen him in concert, and I had the same experience where I heard albums that they released recently, and I just wasn't really blown away in any sense. But then I saw him in concert, and they're unbelievable. I mean, I think they're at the end of the day a live band who's put out records, you know. But I remember first hearing Ohio, and it was in like the most perfect setting for that album. Like I was going on like a road trip with a friend, and he just happened to have it because a friend borrowed it. And like the minute it started playing, I was like, "Oh my Lord, this is a perfect album," you know. Yeah. And it was. I mean, it double albums are, they can often be kind of vanity, you know, displays. Yeah. But it was just this tight, perfect, and even I mean, it had variety, but it was it did have. I don't know. I mean, I kind of, it has a certain vibe that holds the whole thing together. You know what I mean with Ohio?
Yeah, it's definitely really cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, in a way that's not monotonous.
Yeah.
It's hard to pull off when you're playing 90 minutes of music.
And you mentioned them. Have they been, even amidst some of the albums that might not be your thing, were they quite an influence on you? Because it sounds like you listened to them in college, which is fairly impressionable time as you start being serious about your music.
Yeah, I mean, even though I haven't loved their last couple albums as much, there's something about just the way that they approach life.
Mm-hmm.
And at least from what I can tell, the simplicity with which they live that I'm really drawn to. And I think Linford, the piano player from Over the Rhine, probably my favorite piano player of anybody I've heard. Just like, doesn't really wow you with anything he does. You can tell that each note is just so intentional,
right?
And like, says as much with the notes that he doesn't play as he does with the ones that he does.
He doesn't hit wrong notes.
Not at all.
Or even false notes, you know?
Yeah. So I think that's taught me a lot. And been a pretty big influence on my piano playing, because it's easy to sit down and be like, oh, I want to come up with a crazy part that'll blow people away or whatever, but it takes a little more self-control to sit down and say, all right, I'm just going to play something really simple, something that anybody could play.
Mm-hmm.
But to try to like untap the value and the meaning that can be hidden in something like that is a pretty cool thing when it happens.
Right. Agreed. And with Over the Rhine, since we're kind of on the subject of them to some extent, they write incredible music, but they're also very good lyricists. Even the songs that haven't been my thing, I can tell that it's good. It's just whether it pulls the heartstrings, really. But do you enjoy, I mean, I think a lot of people who are familiar with your work think of you as a, you know, a really incredible pianist. Do you enjoy the lyric writing of it? And add to that, share a little bit after answering that question about your own songwriting process. A lot of people who listen to this tend to be interested in that facet of it. For instance, do you write music before lyrics before music? You know, the really bare bones stuff. So,
writing lyrics. I mean, it's really hard for me. It's definitely harder than writing music. But it's something that I really enjoy when it happens, because I draw as much inspiration from, as far as lyrics go, from literature and poetry and things like that, as I do from other like song lyricists. Mm-hmm. I love reading. I love classical fiction. I love just about anything that's well written. I usually sit down for a good chunk of time every day and make sure I find time to read. So that definitely, I think, informs my lyric writing, and has just taught me a lot of things as far as, all right, this is a good use of language, and this is an interesting use of language, and this is, you know, sort of a common use of language or a unremarkable use of language.
Right. Yeah. You can learn from bad lyrics and bad writing as well.
Yeah, for sure. But I'm a big believer that the more good things you put in front of you, the more good things will come out when you're creating.
Right.
As far as the process goes, yeah, that's a tricky one. I mean, I've spent a couple of years just sort of, around the time I moved to Nashville, like maybe a year or two before that and a year or two after that, just sort of thinking that it was all about, like, the discipline of songwriting. You know, sort of you just got to make yourself sit down and do it. And there's something, too, that I'm still working through some of that. I think there's a lot of good in that, but that's sort of how the whole city of Nashville operates. Like, the sort of songwriting is my 9-to-5 job. I've talked to people. I talked to a guy once who was a full-time songwriter for a living, and over the past year, he said he had written over 300 songs.
Wow.
And I just don't have that much to say about things, yeah. I don't think I could write 300 songs and have them be things that I want to be added to the world. So I kind of moved back from that sort of business-like machine sort of approach to songwriting.
Cranking them out.
And I've moved into a little bit more of, all right, if this isn't something that, like, really moves me in some way, like, in my own person, in my own heart, like, I don't want to put that out for someone else. Which is a hard standard to, to hold yourself to.
Right.
I mean, I think there's value on both sides of it. I think you have to sort of learn that the craft of songwriting, you know, sit down and make yourself do it, and you have to write a lot of bad songs before you write any good songs.
Right.
So that discipline is really helpful in terms of just learning the craft, learning song structure, learning rhyme schemes, learning, you know, all that kind of stuff. But for me, at least, it hasn't been really helpful to continue writing in that way once I have an understanding of how a song works.
And it's probably harder to pinpoint this because it's always difficult to judge your own work, especially at the time that it's being written, I think. But have you noticed with this new approach any sort of sound differences in the music you've written or overall vibe?
I think it's gotten, I hope it's hopefully more honest again, like more personal. I feel like just about any songwriter, when you first start writing songs, it's just like, when you first start writing songs, you write it out of a necessity, like this sense of, oh, you're going through something probably emotionally, and, you know, there's just something inside of you that you need to get out. And for songwriters or people with musical ability, usually that's kind of the outlet that it takes. But then as you move forward and try to make, like, a career out of doing that, suddenly you can't manufacture, like, that emotion, you know? I mean, I've known people who are fine with the fact that they kind of blow through relationship after relationship because it keeps giving them material for writing songs.
Right.
And I don't know, that's not really the way I want to live.
It doesn't resonate with happily married musicians very well, huh? Isn't that strange how that is almost frowned upon? I think it's gotten better because people seem... It might in part be because people aren't making a ton of money off this right now, so maybe they take themselves a little less seriously, but I felt like there was a time when it was, like, totally uncool to be a responsible person and a musician. I've heard other, like, even some well-known people say this, you know, or they said, like, one of my favorite singer-songwriters, Paul Westerberg, you know, and he has his own solo stuff, and he was in the punk band The Replacements, says that he's been sober for, like, since 1990, but he still has this image of kind of a drunken punk guy, you know? And, he said, like, if you saw my home life, it would be really boring. You know, I go to bed early, I eat really healthy, you know, my wife and I have a very good relationship, you know, he just couldn't tell. Yeah. So, but, yeah, I mean, but yeah, go ahead.
In, in recent years, I mean, I kind of went through that. All right, I'm taking this seriously now, and I just kind of tried to write song after song after song. But if there wasn't, you know, any kind of depth of experience, or some kind of emotional reservoir to write from, I just didn't feel like the output was particularly meaningful. So I try to make sure that what I write is something that's, you know, honest and meaningful, like deeply meaningful to me, and hope that that is enough to resonate with somebody else.
Yeah, even as a responsible, happily married adult, I mean, everybody's got some drama. It probably just looks differently. And without it, whether it's good or bad, it does seem to benefit songs. Even as songs I've heard that have a lot of joy to them, you know, that are very real. I'd like to assume that there's actual fodder behind that. You know, that there's an actual experience that just kind of filled them with that joy, and it came out in song form. You know, or in the sad stuff too. You know.
Yeah, I think you have to live through the sad things in order for that joy to have, you know, much clout behind it.
Right. Yep. Exactly. And you, I don't know. I mean, it might sound a bit presumptuous, but like, I feel like at the end of the day, you can tell when somebody means it or not in songwriting. You know.
That's one thing that really turned me off when we moved to Nashville. Is there's so many people who write songs for a living for other artists or whatever. And I know some people that do it and do it well. But I think most of the things that come out of that world, it just sounds like two strangers who got together for an afternoon and tried to write a song that would make money.
Right.
Which is, to be honest, like what it is in a lot of cases. Right. And I don't want to add to that noise.
Right. Do you have, and I mean, you talked a little bit about goals and that you don't like them, but they're necessary and and such. Do you have I guess it's kind of a twofold question. Is there a certain place that specific place that you would like to be, or do you feel like you're kind of already there? You're just, you know, maturing it. Where do you fit in that spectrum, you think?
It's a work in progress. I feel like in the last couple of weeks, I've started to rearrange some things in my thinking that have really been helpful. And I'm finishing up a new EP right now that I'm really excited about, and just have more like hope about it than I have about anything music related in a long time. And I've started to, I feel like for a long time, in the name of what I thought was like honesty or humility, I was really just not believing that I had anything to offer, or anything of worth that this art that I was creating was, you know, was valuable and was useful. I just didn't believe that that was the case. But I would couch it in terms of like, oh, you know, I'm just doing my best, but I don't know what's going to happen. I just realized recently that, you know, I may have been calling that honesty, but it was really just like self-doubt or, you know, this lack of belief that I had anything to offer. So starting to realize that, you know, it's possible to, at least I hope, to be humble, but still believe that I'm making music that is good and that is worth listening to and worth for other people to listen to.
I hear what you're saying, that there's a good type of confidence that you think can benefit music.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's like totally transformed like my actions to an extent, because I mean, who wants to get up and make music if you don't think that anybody cares about it or that it's probably not even going to be good enough?
Right.
You know, why would you pitch that album to a label if you don't even think they're going to care?
Right.
So I'm just kind of trying to take this approach of, I think this is good. And not everybody is going to think it's good, but I think there are people out there who will think it's good. And I want to figure out a way to get that in front of as many ears as possible.
Right. And we'll kind of close on the topic of that album. Share what you can about the album. Who you working with to make it? What can we expect from it? And if you have any dates or whereabouts or I'm sorry, roundabout date when it's coming out.
It's just a 6-song EP, which is the first thing I've put out in about 3 years. Like I said earlier, after going through a pretty dark time where I wasn't really doing anything music related for a while, this is kind of me working my way back out of that. I recorded over the course of, man, like a year or two. At my drummer's house, because he's got a really nice home studio set up. And that way we could just kind of do it at our own pace, instead of having to worry about studio time and how much it was costing us per hour or any of that kind of stuff. So we trucked mostly at his house, and then for the first time I actually decided to pay somebody else to mix it rather than just having the tracking engineer mix it. And I'm really glad I did that. I was able to get it mixed by a really talented guy here in town. Really happy with what he's doing with it, and it's in the hands of the mastering guy right now.
Oh, no kidding. So it's done.
Yeah, I should be getting the final product back in the next week, probably.
Okay.
But then beyond that, I'm it's a little open-ended as far as when it's actually going to be released to the public. I'm taking a little time to set up a few meetings and get some people's brains here around Nashville to find ways to get it out there a little bit better than I could just on my own. So.
Is there?
I'm not exactly sure.
Sorry, what was that?
I'm not exactly sure what that's going to look like, but I'm wanting to take the time to sort that out rather than just put it out there kind of without thinking.
You mentioned meetings. Is there some people, is there some opportunities that behind this that it might be different from the last one, or do you mean just people involved talking? I pictured you with a suit talking to these big execs when you said that.
No, I mean, it won't be anything huge, I don't think, but you know, just trying to figure out, like, all right, could I get connected with somebody who could help me with booking, you know, put a tour together behind this rather than booking it myself, or do I need to hire a publicist to try to get some better press behind it, or to pitch it to a small label, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just kind of trying to figure out how to put a little bit of a team together around me to make a push behind this album.
Do you have an album name?
Yeah, it's going to be called How We Spend Our Days, which is the author Annie Dillard has a quote. Says how we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. Which every time I think about it, just kind of like kind of rocks my world a little bit.
Yeah.
And as simple as it is, like just the idea of like the of each day being incredibly significant in each moment, no matter how menial the task might be, carrying on behind it some sort of deep significance. Which kind of ties into, you know, the journey I've had the last couple of years of trying to understand my own music and why I'm creating it and stuff.
Right. It's a great quote because it's both like grandiose and really almost mundane at the same time. You know, it's like something to shoot for, but it's very practical. That's good. I've read some Andy Diller, but I don't know a lot of quotes, and I certainly have not heard that one. That's great.
I forget which book that is from. It might be from one of her essays.
Yeah,
it's just that every time I hear it, it's like kind of this feeling of, oh, shoot, what did I do today?
Right.
like this is what I'm building my life into, you know, these actions. But on the other hand, it's like equally encouraging of, oh, I did something good today. Or if it was a little thing, like maybe that's building towards, you know, living a good life.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It was good to get your we've talked about these things probably a million times, but it is a different dynamic when you're actually recording it and gonna publish it. Are there any concerts coming up that you'd like to share, or upcoming tours that might direct listeners to?
I've got a couple things on the books. Nothing around Michigan, but I'm playing in Nashville on August 5th, St. Louis August 8th, and Louisville August 9th.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then probably next time I'll be back up to the Midwest would be probably October, I think.
Okay, right on. Well, cool. All right, well, thank you so much for joining us, Zach. Good luck with the album that's coming out, and keep us posted so they can find out when that album is out and how to keep finding out about you. And your website is?
ZachVinson.com.
Excellent.
And you can find me on Facebook and Twitter and all those other internet things.
Mm.
Yeah.
MySpace and Xena or whatever. Zanga.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
About that.
Yeah, I probably have one floating out there somewhere, but well, great, well, awesome. We'll keep talking, and thanks for joining us today. Yeah. Again.